Ultrasound Gel Podcast.
Ultrasound Gel Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Ultrasound Gel Podcast. I'm Mike Pratz, and today I'm lucky enough to be joined by Delia Gold and Cray Bolger. How are you guys doing today?
Very well.
Good morning, Michael.
So Delia is a new voice to our podcast, and she is a pediatric emergency medicine trained physician who also has an interest in ultrasound. So today we're going to be discussing this paper that's titled Effect of Abdominal Ultrasound on Clinical Care, Outcomes, and Resource Use Among Children with Blunt Torso Trauma, a Randomized Clinical Trial. The lead author on this is Holmes, and this was published in JAMA June 2017. This has been a hot topic there, bouncing around the interwebs, and I think that a lot of people have been kind of up in arms or discussing it. So
we started many a Twitter war.
That's right, many Twitter wars over this. So we wanted to get down to it and see what we thought of it and what all the fuss is about. So Delia, why don't you give us some background on this topic?
All right, so as we all know, the FAST scan is a point-of-care ultrasound scan that we use in trauma. It is well-established in adults, was utilized initially to replace a DPL on unstable patients that you thought might need to go to the OR. Now that point-of-care ultrasound is kind of making its way into pediatric emergency medicine specifically, there's not been a ton of studies on how useful the FAST scan can be in our patient population, particularly in trauma at a pediatric center. So this study wanted to look at the hospital length of stay, the complications, and hospital charges related to using FAST on trauma patients at this single center study.
We are looking at, in this study, and this is where a lot of the contention arises, we're looking at hemodynamically stable children. So these are not the sick trauma patients. These are the people that come in, and although they may, we can talk about in the inclusion criteria, they may have some significant mechanisms, they otherwise look pretty well. So Cray, walk us through this study. How did they perform it?
So to be included in this study, you had to be a kid, so less than 18 years of age. You had to come in within 24 hours of your injury. You had to have blunt torso trauma, so you had to be a pediatric trauma patient. And you had to have the trauma plus a mechanism. So concerning mechanisms would be an MVC greater than 60 miles per hour, ped versus auto, or bike versus auto, a fall greater than 20 feet, a crush to the torso, a physical assault involving the abdomen, a GCS less than 15, multiple long bone fractures or paralysis. In addition to this, they also had to be hemodynamically stable. So these were fairly lucky patients if you think about it. Bad mechanism, but good vitals. And the final inclusion criteria was blunt trauma with a physical exam finding or history concerning French abdominal trauma. People who were excluded, hemodynamically unstable patients with age-adjusted vitals, GCS less than 9, a seatbelt sign, penetrating trauma, trauma that presents after 24 hours, prior imaging, or known disease process that leads to fluid in the abdomen. So this was a non-blinded clinical trial. They looked at the rate of abdominal CT use, missed abdominal injuries, length of stay, and hospital charges. They also looked at time to CT scan, hospital length of stay, and the physician's suspicion for intra-abdominal injury before and after their FAST exam. So they broke the patients out into three categories by age, less than 3 to 9.99999 years, and anybody 10 or older. They were put into blocks of 20 within these cohorts, and then they had the FAST performed by ED physicians. 35 of these were EM trained, 5 were PEDS-EM trained under the ASEP credentialing guidelines. The physicians made their bedside interpretation, recorded what they thought before the scan, what they thought of the scan, and their suspicion after the scan. They said if it was negative, positive, or indeterminate, and then this was also compared to an expert review of the scan. They also decided if the FAST exam was going to change their decision to do a CT scan or not. The scan, they used a curvilinear probe, and they did the FAST exam without any extended views. So they didn't do an EFAST, they didn't do paracolic gutters, they just did the standard four-view, subxiphoid, right upper quadrant, left upper quadrant, and bladder view.
So just to summarize that design, this was randomized clinical trial. They put kids into blocks of 20 into either getting a fast or not getting a fast. And then they were comparing whether or not this affected the use of abdominal CT, their length of stay, their charges, and then as a secondary outcome, if it changed the physician's suspicion for injury.
And it's quite important that they were stratifying their risk by the physician's assessment, because previous pediatric papers on FAST had clinical suspicion was a big part of whether or not they would decide to CT. And there was a previous study that showed that if you had a low suspicion of intra-abdominal injury and a negative FAST, the PEM doctor was more likely to not CT them and be fine with the FAST result. So I think that's probably a little bit why they included that.
So let's get into the results. They ended up having 925 patients included. That was 460 in the FAST arm and 465 in the standard arm. Mean age of these pediatric patients was 9.7 years old. So, looking at their primary outcomes, the bottom line is there was no difference in these groups. No difference in the rate of abdominal CTs, missed injuries, ED length of stay, or projected hospital charges. There was one missed intra-abdominal injury in the FAST group, but in that case it was actually also missed on the CT scan that was done on that patient. And it ended up being a case where the patient was sent home and then they got called back when the overread was a laceration. Secondary results, so they checked the agreement between the ED physicians and the ultrasound experts. They got a kappa of 0.45, moderate agreement there. Of the 19 patients who did end up having intra-abdominal injuries on CT, which I want to draw your attention, there's only 19 patients who had fluid on their CT. Both the ED physicians and experts did not really do that well with the FAST, so there was a lot of false negatives there, even when it was overread by a expert in ultrasound. And what that means to me is not that these people were not great at the FAST, it just speaks to the limitations of the FAST exam. It's not going to pick up every injury, and it's not going to pick up even every injury that causes intraperitoneal fluid collection. Another thing they found was that when they looked at whether the FAST changes the physician's suspicion, so in the FAST group, the physician's suspicion of intra-abdominal injury went down after a FAST if they were felt to be low risk already. So if they had a higher or moderate risk pre-test probability, it didn't really change by getting that FAST exam. And as we'll see down the line, a lot of these patients ended up getting CTs whether they were in the FAST arm or the not FAST arm. One finding that they did have that was a secondary outcome was there was a decreased hospital length of stay in the FAST group compared to the non-FAST group. And that was a difference of 29.6 hours versus 40.2 hours. And that's hospital length of stay, not emergency department length of stay. Another thing they talked about was whether or not the FAST could change your plans. So they looked at all the cases where the physician marked that performing this FAST either made them get a CT or not get a CT. That ended up being 25 patients, about 3% of their population. When the FAST made them get a CT, they did catch one case of an intra-abdominal injury, and when the FAST led them to not get a CT, there was no injuries that were missed. The main outcome here that people are talking about is there was very little difference between these groups. Whether you get a FAST or you don't get a FAST in this population of hemodynamically stable kids, it doesn't really change a lot of the patient-centered outcomes that we're looking at in this case. So let's get into some of the limitations of this study.
Well, I think one thing is this isn't the patient population we do FAST exams in, which has been the big controversy on Twitter, and I think everywhere. And I don't think necessarily the authors were trying to say that this is. They were just trying to see if this low-risk patient population could potentially avoid radiation. Which obviously is a bigger concern in the pediatric population than adults. But I think that that's an important thing to note, is this isn't who the FAST was designed for. I think it would be interesting to see the same patient population studied with a Delta FAST, so one initially and one 4 hours later, which I think is where FAST potentially has a role in the hemodynamically stable patient. At least that's held true in adults.
Yeah, I agree with that. As a PEM provider, some of the things that I thought about immediately is just the effect of a trauma protocol and individual sites on how you image. And this particular, this is a single site study at, I believe, a combined peds and adult emergency room where there is both adult and pediatric providers who I'm sure are very fabulous at their job. But when you look at the CT rate, there was still a lot of CTs done. It was about a 60% rate of CT, which is higher than, I would say, some other pediatric institutions. So it kind of leads me to think that this is more measuring how good people think FAST is and how willing they are to rely on it and not get a CT, but not actually measuring how good FAST is specifically. And referring back to what Cray said, it's not the patient population that you would use it for. This is supposed to be to see if you need to go to the operating room. In pediatrics, a lot of the children don't go to the operating room, so that definitely means that we have to redefine what the FAST is. And I think this paper was kind of a first attempt, not a first attempt, but a very well-designed single-site study to attempt to define that, how we're going to use it.
When you talk about how it is based on a protocol or the practitioner's plan, it's interesting. They wanted to measure the number of CTs, but you can see that the FAST exam only changed whether or not they got a CT a limited amount of time. So when you're breaking it into two arms, it's kind of making an assumption that the FAST is going to affect some of these outcomes, but you can see from their data that that's not always the case. They don't always trust the FAST to make that decision of getting a CT or not, and that probably affects a lot of these things we're seeing here.
I think the one thing that makes kids different than adults is something Delia mentioned, though, is that kids don't go to the OR very frequently, even if they have a positive FAST. So I think that's important to point out, is these missed intra-abdominal injuries, were they mismanaged or were they just missed? And it would be nice to see in follow-up, would these be people that would otherwise have been kept for observation, serial abdominal exams, serial FAST exams, et cetera, in which case maybe the FAST could potentially provide some insight into further risk stratifying them into a lower risk where they didn't necessarily need that CT scan. Because if you have an injury you're not doing anything about, how clinically relevant is it?
Yeah, looking at a lot of the imaging studies, like the PCARN studies for head CT, this article to me just kind of underlines that if you're not going to take the child to the operating room based on hemodynamics or risk of an injury that needs to be operated on, really you could say that this study supports serial FAST exams, serial abdominal exams, maybe trending labs, and even shared decision-making with the family, that you admit them for observation and evaluate. And if they have worsening pain or something changes with their vitals, you can get the CT scan at that point. But, you know, what do you need the CT for at that time if it's not going to change your management is the question.
Right. And I think that what you can take away, another thing you can look at from this article, in the stable patient who gets a FAST exam, you could make the argument they really didn't miss too much on the FAST exam, at least when they were getting CTs appropriately afterwards. So I think what this is going towards is if you have some sort of a protocol that incorporates a FAST or possibly serial FAST, and you know how accurate that's going to be, then you can use that to potentially avoid unnecessary CTs.
There was also, as we talked about, the Twittersphere wars and the drama, there was editorials and lots of discussion. Kessler and JAMA had an editorial referring to this study and brought up a really good point about, especially at a single site, the trauma protocol and imaging protocol and response to the FAST scan is, if it's not ubiquitous among all groups, then how can you apply it to everybody as like kind of a rule for all PEM providers and all pediatric hospitals? And so I think probably what I imagine the next step will be is they will take this to a multi-center study and try to even come up with maybe a algorithm of what you do with regards to labs and kind of combining the labs and the FAST and the vitals and the mechanism and saying, you know, almost like a PCARN head CT rule, this information can allow you to not do a CT scan or admit them for serial abdominal exams, and everyone will feel confident to do that. So I think this was pretty much the first step towards that, and a very well done paper, but really just measured, do people trust doing FAST alone, or do they need to validate their feeling with a CT? And it seems like they needed the CT since they scanned a lot of children.
I agree with Delia. I think my interpretation of this is that the FAST is going to be used differently in adults than it is in kids than it is in adults. that the FAST will be part of a decision rule rather than a decision tool that stands alone. So an adult hemodynamically unstable FAST positive OR is a pretty standard action pathway. I think in kids, the FAST will be a tool as part of a global decision rule because their management plans are very different. So I think that's where we have to maybe think about the FAST a little bit differently in kids and don't think about it positive, negative, indeterminate, automatically determines a next, very clear next step. I think the FAST plus X, Y, and Z determines the next step because kids are much more complex and their management is different.
Another point that we could discuss is contrast-enhanced FAST in the pediatric patient especially. We discuss this in adult patients, and we know that the idea behind contrast-enhanced FAST is that you can not only slightly more accurately see intra-abdominal free fluid, but now you can get to the point where you can assess organ injury, but even grade organ injury. So there's some problems with that because there's obviously still a lot of types of injuries that you can miss with contrast-enhanced FAST. But if you're getting even higher sensitivities towards these intra-abdominal injuries, where in pediatrics you would conservatively treat them anyways, then perhaps there's a role for the contrast-enhanced FAST in avoiding further CTs. And I know there's some research being done on that topic. All right, one other thing I wanted to bring up that just kind of looking through this when you're talking about generalizing this to your population, these patients were fairly well appearing. When you look at the population they describe here, their GCSs were 15, at least the median and interquartile range, 15 to 15. Their pediatric trauma score was 10, which if you're not familiar with that, it's a score out of 12, and the higher is the healthier. So they had a median score of 10 there with a range of 10 to 11. And there was really only 13 patients in the whole study whom physicians thought there was a greater than 50% chance they had an intra-abdominal injury. And as we know, overall, there was only a 5.4% incidence of injury in this study. So this was a population of kids who, at face value, appears pretty well. Now, on the other hand, the results also show us that 16.4% of these went to the ICU. So we don't really know why that was. It could have been due to other related injuries or something else that was going on that was not reported relevant to their intra-abdominal injury pathway. But I think when you're thinking about the kids that this applies to, it's good to know that these guys are pretty well.
I think, though, Mike, they did try to find sick patients. Like, I think, if anything, their inclusion criteria really went to seek out high mechanisms. Obviously, the hemodynamically unstable got excluded. But I'm wondering if this more reflects who the pediatric trauma patient population really is. They're either going to be the very well for the first several hours and then potentially decompensate, which is why they think they get closer monitoring, or they're going to come in severely injured and very ill. There's, I think, less than adults, there's probably less initial transient responders than we have in the adult population. Delia?
Yeah, I would say that a big part of why I did peds is that kids are just tough as nails, man. Compared to adults, they, I cannot tell you how many times, and I'm sure my compatriots would agree, with a grade 3 splenic lac that is bleeding into their abdomen, and they are hemodynamically stable, and they're telling me, yeah, it just kind of hurts up there. I think that is the beauty of our patient population, but yes, Cray, it definitely makes it harder to define who you're looking for when it's more rare and usually takes a little time to find, unless it is kind of that obvious, very sick pediatric trauma patient, which we of course have.
I see a lot of patients that claim they have a very high pain tolerance, so I'm not sure if that holds
but
true.
This one is 11 out of 10.
Now, also of note, it took them 2.5 hours to get CTs in this, and one of their outcomes was the length of stay, so this is kind of relevant to their results. And that was defined as the time from when they arrived to when they got the CT. So 2.5 hours, I don't know, that seems like a long time for us, at least, when we have our CTs right next to our trauma bay. It's usually on the order of minutes after we finish our assessment. But in pediatrics, maybe there's more to it. Maybe they're doing assessments in between there. Maybe they're waiting for something to happen before they made a decision. But that seems like a lot of time. And especially if you have an evolving injury, perhaps that would that decreased the sensitivity of the fast if they didn't pick up something, and then 2.5 hours later when they get their CT, now there's blood in the belly.
Yeah, if I was imagining, I do not work at this institution, but based on their inclusion criteria, it seems that they were looking at level 2 traumas. And level 2 traumas, at least at my institution, trauma surgeons are not immediately there. You decide if you need to consult them and get them involved. And as quick as they can be, there's still often a bit of a time lag. So that's one potential reason. But it would definitely be, they didn't mention the time difference between the CT scan being obtained and the FAST scan. So that potentially could have been a difference in sensitivity.
Alternately, it could have taken them 2.5 hours to do the FAST exam, which was not reported.
Well, then that's a slow exam.
We call that the slow exam. Sonographic longitudinal observation in well-appearing patients.
Did you make that up, Mike?
I did just make that up.
He's Boehner trained.
Yeah. So in this study, the sensitivity of the FAST, they noted, also was about 33%, a little bit lower than what has been reported in the past, even in pediatrics. So let me try to summarize everything here, because we went through a lot and there's a lot to discuss in this paper. This was a really well-performed study. It is randomized trial. Patients who were pediatric presenting to a trauma center came in and they were randomized either to get a FAST exam or to not get a FAST exam and get their usual care. There ended up being 925 patients. They found no difference in the rate of abdominal CTs obtained, missed intra-abdominal injuries, the ED length of stay, or the projected hospital charges. There was only, really their only difference that they could find was there's a slightly decreased hospital length of stay in the FAST arm by about 10 hours. So the limitations that we discussed were, is this the population that you really care about using the FAST exam in? And I think that's kind of a complex discussion on how you can utilize ultrasound in the pediatric trauma patient. But overall, the take-home points from this study were that the FAST exam does not really lead to a reduction in CT scans or any of these other outcomes in hemodynamically stable pediatric patients, whether that's something that's relevant or not, or maybe it's just a stepping stone to further research. And secondly, that the FAST is not going to be sensitive for injury in these patients. So don't count on the FAST to rule out your injuries when there's especially a very low incidence of injury.
I think kind of for me the take home is not to apply the FAST. It's we need to rethink how we apply the FAST. That peds is, as we know, a different land. They're not just tiny adults. And so applying the same imaging modalities, applying the same algorithms just doesn't work. So like you suggested, whether it's contrast enhanced, serial FAST, that there's probably a role for decreasing radiation in these patient population, but we need to look at it differently than we do in adults.
Well, we'd like to thank the authors for this study, and thank you for listening to our podcast. If you like what you hear, you can check us out online at ultrasoundgel.org. You can subscribe to our podcast, visit us in iTunes or any other app-based mechanism that you would get this through. And furthermore, you can also now check us out on Facebook or Google+. We'd love to hear from you, so feel free to contact us or post comments on the site. Thanks for listening.
More pressure, more gel, more pressure, more gel,
more ultrasound gel podcast.
Cool.